This is Jim Engster. Coming next on the show, we'll visit with Jan Moeller, the director of the Louisiana Budget Project. Prior to this, he was a veteran journalist, and we'll talk with him about the happenings at the state capitol and beyond, including what's going on in Washington and how it impacts Louisiana. Jan Moeller with a view of the world from his perch at the Louisiana Budget Project. Also, former Congressman Jeff Landry on the budget shutdown, the Republican from New Iberia. He is, of course, a man who is a staunch conservative, and we'll get his take on who's at fault for the impasse that's been going on for a couple of weeks now on Capitol Hill. And Jeff Landry is also uttering harsh words for Attorney General Buddy Caldwell. We'll find out why. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Engster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Thank you for joining us, and we appreciate your support. And we're joined in studio by Jan Moeller, the director of the Louisiana Budget Project. For 2 years, he's been the director of this group, which monitors and reports on state government spending and how it affects Louisiana's low to moderate income families, an award-winning journalist, formerly with the New Orleans Times-Picayune State Capitol Bureau. And also, many may not know that Jan Moeller was an associate of the legendary journalist Jack Anderson and his syndicated Washington Merry-Go-Round column. When did you do that?
I started in 1992, actually in 91 as an intern, and I was there until 1999. So I spent 7 years with Jack doing just about any job and every job you could do in that office.
So you were in Washington with the great Jack Anderson.
I was there for 7 years. I was there for the last government shutdown. In fact, I was on Capitol Hill covering the Republican Congress in 95, the last time they shut down the government.
Well, the budget was in relatively good shape then, and shutdown appeared to be unreasonable, but now it may still be unreasonable, but no doubt the debt is spiraling way beyond what it should.
Well, the debt is high, there's no doubt about it, but I think we need to remember that the deficit has come down dramatically in the last couple of years. It's shrunk by more than $1 trillion. So the crisis that people are talking about in Washington, in my mind, is very much a manufactured one, and there's no reason that Congress should not be able to agree on a budget and lift the debt ceiling to keep this government going. Any fallout from this that's happening is truly a manufactured crisis.
Well, it does appear that the Republicans, and we will hear from Jeff Landry, the former Republican congressman, on this show later this hour, but it does appear that they're losing the PR battle on this. Here we are 2 days away from a presumed government default unless something is done, and the GOP, if these polls are accurate, the GOP is taking a beating.
They are, and they probably should. I think anybody who has ever taken a civic class understands that it's Congress that passes a budget, and they simply have not done that. And this business with the debt ceiling, it's just really incredible to me that there is a faction of our elected officials in Washington who don't believe that we should pay the bills that we have rung up as a country, that we shouldn't, that we should default on the good faith and credit of the United States. That shouldn't be a part of the negotiations. That should be something you do, and then you start negotiating.
297-5633. We'll get to state budget politics as well with Jan Moeller, who's head of the Louisiana Budget Project. That's LBP, not LPB, LBP. Jan Moeller, you've been there 2 years. The organization itself has been around for how long?
We were founded in 2006 as an initiative of LANO, the Louisiana Association of Nonprofit Organizations.
And you also went to college in Washington, D.C.
I did. I went to American University.
So where Cal Thomas went, by the way. I'm sure you're in accord with him
on absolutely
many points of view.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But you must have liked Washington. It's an exciting city, but you know, people in the hustings or on the hustings in Louisiana and other states and the hinterlands, they're not all that enthused about what's going on right now.
Well, Washington hasn't distinguished itself. You know, there's always been polarization. that's nothing new. But I think the gridlock we're seeing this fall is really unprecedented, certainly in the 25 years or so that I've been watching the goings-on closely. And again, I think we need to remember that this government shutdown is not just about a few monuments on the Mall, which are great symbols and great photo ops. But when you shut down the government, you are really doing serious damage to this economy. And this has to do with everything from veterans' disability benefits that are not being processed to permits that are not being issued. There was a story this morning on your air, Jim, where Alaskan fishing season might be delayed because people aren't getting the permits. They need to go out and fish. So the ripple effects of this are just being felt right now, and it's really just incredible that they can't agree on the most fundamental thing that they have to do.
And you're pointing a finger at the Republican Party.
I don't want to get get partisan, but there certainly seems to be enough votes in the House and Senate to pass a clean resolution to keep the government going. There is a minority of representatives in the House who seem to be holding this up. And again, I just wish they could bring something for a vote and let the people's House decide. But apparently the leaders of the House have decided they don't want to do that. And so they're going to keep the shutdown going. And I think at this point, they're getting very close to doing serious damage, not just to America's economy, but to the world economy.
297-5633, if you'd like to join the conversation with Jan Moeller, director of the Louisiana Budget Project. And Louisiana has several members of the U.S. House of Representatives who are Republicans, including Bill Cassidy and John Fleming, Charles Bustani, three doctors, by the way, all of whom have voiced opposition to Obamacare. Do you think they're on the right track?
No. As we know, the rollout right now is having a few problems, but the basic premise of this law, which was passed by a majority of the House, by a majority of the Senate, which was signed into law by the President of the United States and upheld by the Supreme Court, the premise of this law is that everybody should have health coverage, that nobody should go bankrupt or be unable to see a doctor when they get sick, and that those who have some ability to pay for their coverage should do so. That's what the law does in its essence. It's a lot more complicated than that, obviously. And the idea that we are trying to shut down the government to go back and revisit what is settled law, again, is incredible. And I'm disappointed that they've taken that tack.
Now, Charles Bustani, I'm reminded, and it is correct, he did say the state should accept the Medicaid money. Bobby Jindal has not done that. You have taken fault with that decision. I think Cassidy and Fleming are in accord with the governor on this. What's going on regarding this? Is this really something that's going to affect people, or is it an issue that Democrats are using to tar and feather people like Congressman Cassidy?
No, this is Medicaid expansion as part of this law. States, the premise was that people who are truly poor, those who make below the federal poverty line, can't afford private insurance. So we were going to extend Medicaid to low-income adults. In Louisiana, that's about 400,000 people who today either have no insurance or they have very substandard insurance that they're paying too much for, would be able to get private coverage paid for by federal dollars. This is not only a good idea for the 400,000 people who would have the ability to see a doctor and who would no longer be one illness or injury away from going bankrupt, but it's also good for the economy. This would have brought in $8 billion to the Louisiana economy, money that would have flowed to every single parish over the next 10 years, and it would have helped solve our chronic budget shortfalls at the state level. It would have brought in more than $150 million in this budget year alone. All Governor Jindal would have to do is say yes, and I'm very disappointed that he's decided to stick with the status quo in Louisiana, which has put us in 49th place on health outcomes, when there's really an opportunity to make a huge dent in our chronic rate of uninsurance and to really improve health outcomes.
Another question from a listener about the comparison with your group, the Louisiana Budget Project and the Public Affairs Research Council, led by your former boss at the Picayune, Robert Travis Scott. There are some major distinctions between these two groups.
Well, we do a lot of the same thing. We do research. We produce reports. You know, I think we probably take a little bit more progressive tack on a lot of things, and we have different things that we focus on. They get very involved in public records debates and government transparency issues, and they do an excellent job of that. I think they do a wonderful job. And we have the issues that we work on. We've been working hard on Medicaid expansion. We've been working hard on tax reform. We've been working hard on we've spoken about things like film tax credits, predatory lending. So right. We each have our issues that we are interested in, but we do very similar things.
And you and Robert are still good friends?
And we're still close friends.
But Robert has done a better job explaining the governor's aversion to this Medicaid money than the governor has. When you go to Robert's house on Park Boulevard, do you two get in heated exchanges over this?
We discuss a lot of issues over an occasional glass of wine, and I think we agree on a lot, and sometimes we disagree, but it's always in a pleasant way.
All right, 297-5633 or 877-217-5757. Jan Moeller, director of the Louisiana Budget Project. Dominic in Grand Coteau. Hi, Dominic.
Good morning, guys. John, I'd like to thank you for your straightforward and factual comments on the issue with the feds and our state issues, too. I think so many times the media is trying to be fair and balanced or even handed on things, but there are two sides and three sides to issues, but they're not always the correct side. And thank you for pointing that out. I really appreciate it, and a lot of people do.
Well, that's nice of you to say, Dominic. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Dominic. I'm sure Jan is appreciating those kind words. And we've noted on this show that when you took your job, the governor of Louisiana, he was not enthused about your new endeavor in life.
No, he wasn't. I've known the governor. My first assignment for the Times-Picayune in 2003 was actually his first appearance as a candidate for governor. So I feel like I go back with Governor Jindal till the very start of his political career. It's been a very interesting career to watch, and I have a great deal of respect for Governor Jindal and his intellect and his work ethic. But we sometimes disagree on issues and take very different views on some of the major issues of the day, but that's what the marketplace of ideas is for, and he has his views and we have ours.
297-5633 is your number. Richard Reeves, the columnist who often appears in the Baton Rouge Advocate, as he does today, who's been on this show many times and wrote a best-selling biography about Ronald Reagan, quotes Ronald Reagan in 1961 in today's column, saying, this is about Medicare, by the way, and when it was being bandied about, he says, this program, I promise you, will pass just as surely as the sun will come up tomorrow, and behind it will come other federal programs that will invade every area of freedom as we have known it in this country. And if you don't do this and I don't do it, we're going to spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free. Ronald Reagan, I think, went to his grave thinking Medicare was a disaster. And that's certainly something that is relevant in the discussion about Obamacare. Has Medicare been a disaster?
Absolutely not. And I think the many millions of American seniors who get health care benefits from Medicare would agree with me that it's been a very successful program. And I think the one point of that column is that conservatives back then fought desperately against the creation of Medicare and Medicaid in the mid-60s. Here we are almost 50 years later, and we're finally going the final step on health care reform and extending coverage to adults who can't afford coverage. And we're seeing a lot of the same debates play out. But I think nobody in their right mind would want to repeal Medicare or Medicaid. So those programs have proven stood the test of time, and I think that's I think Obamacare in the end will stand the test of time as well.
Well, we'll ask Jeff Landry when he comes on the show later this hour if he would do away with Medicaid and Medicare. And we'll hear more from Jan Moeller. 297-5633 is your number outside the area, 877-217-5757. Back in 90 seconds on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. And Jan Moeller, director of the Louisiana Budget Project, is with us once again. And the focus remains on Capitol Hill. Senate leaders are apparently close to an accord, but whether or not the House will accept what is being discussed by Mitch McConnell and Harry Reid remains to be seen. We'll talk more with Jeff Landry, the former congressman, who will be with us if things go according to form in short order. But we're pleased to have Jan Moeller with us in the House for a while longer. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. How does this dispute compute as far as next year's Senate race?
Well, there was a story in this morning's paper that Senator Landry has dug in her heels and has taken a strong stand against the shutdown and against the tactics being employed by the Republicans, particularly in the House. So she certainly is not backing down. I think there was probably the hope among some people that vulnerable Senate Democrats might be induced to cave under political pressure and maybe help end this impasse in favor of the Republicans. Mary Landry has made it clear that she's not going to do that. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And we have a long way to go in the campaign. I guess the answer is I don't know, but we'll see, and it'll be interesting.
And Congressman Cassidy has been somewhat quiet about this.
Well, I think I would be too if I saw the same polls that presumably he is seeing. Congress as a whole, Democrats and Republicans, are terribly unpopular, but I think more people are blaming the Republicans right now than the Democrats. And you see particularly Republicans from northern or mid-Atlantic states like Virginia, Pennsylvania, these so-called swing states, they are really feeling the heat and trying to run from this as fast as they can. And you see even Governor Jindal has been up in Washington trying to kind of distance himself from the party on Capitol Hill. So this is clearly unpopular. I think it's unpopular for a very good reason. But the next election is a long way from now. We're more than a year out, and a lot can happen between now and then.
All right. That brings us to a question from Andrew. He asks why Governor Jindal supposedly snubbed Tony Perkins over the weekend. That was an event, and the governor had a scheduling conflict, and I'll take him at his word. But as far as I know, he and Tony Perkins are in accord on most issues and are good friends.
That's my understanding as well. I haven't spoken to anybody about this issue, so I only know what I read in the paper, and I have no reason to not take him at his word that there was a scheduling conflict.
He did appoint Perkins to a panel, didn't he?
He appointed him to a law enforcement commission, and he was recently a guest of honor at the Louisiana Family Forum annual banquet. So he is certainly very solicitous, very tight with the religious right in this state. And I doubt that this signifies any kind of break between Governor Jindal and the sort of hardcore religious right that Tony Perkins represents.
Now, Bill Cassidy was not part of that group until very recently, and he has a person running to the right of him in Rob Manus for the U.S. Senate next year. But 11 years ago, let's turn the clock back to 2002 when Mary Landrieu was seeking a second term. She had not one, not two, but three prominent Republicans running against her in Susie Terrell, John Cooksey, and Tony Perkins. And Bill Cassidy, at that time, had a choice to choose any brand of conservative Republicanism he wanted, and he decided to go with the senator. He supported her. He contributed to her campaign. Will this be relevant in his campaign in 2014?
It's interesting. I mean, there certainly seems to be some folks on the far right of the Republican Party who don't trust Bill Cassidy. But his voting record on Capitol Hill is as far right, as conservative as just about anybody else's. So, and if you're so far to the right that Bill Cassidy is too liberal for you, then I don't know if you're going to have a candidate in the runoff. So I suspect he will get those votes. What Cassidy needs to do, obviously, is get in the runoff, and I don't think Mr. Manus, frankly, is a serious threat to that at this point. That's just armchair speculation.
He could force a runoff, though, which might end up benefiting Cassidy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if it's in a two-person, I think what Bill Cassidy wants is a two-person race between himself and Senator Landrieu. And again,
in December.
In December. And
right.
It's just armchair speculation right now. But I think unless somebody more serious than Mr. Manus emerges, I think that's what we're looking at. It's a two-candidate race at this point.
Well, next year will be interesting. Bernie Pinsenat was right in the seat you were a few days ago, and he more or less predicted a victory for Cassidy and noted that Landrieu is the last Democrat to win a statewide election in Louisiana. That was in 2008, so next year will be 6 years. And Cassidy has the advantage of running against a president who's unpopular in Louisiana, just as David Vitter did in 2010. I would imagine the race next year, Jan, will be as much Cassidy against Obama as it is Cassidy against Landrieu.
Absolutely. I think if I'm Bill Cassidy, I would be trying to tie Mary Landrieu to Barack Obama as much as possible because he is unpopular in Louisiana. But at the same time, he has a lot of supporters. I mean, Barack Obama got more votes in Louisiana than Bobby Jindal. In both elections. So if Mary Landrieu can energize that base on her behalf, then she's going to be in pretty good shape. Again, I'm not a pollster like Bernie Pinsenat. I don't look at this full time. I'm a policy analyst. But just as somebody who's interested in politics, I'll be very curious to see how this race turns out.
But on a percentage basis, Barack Obama got 41% in his last try in Louisiana, and Bobby Jindal got, what, 66%?
66%.
Yeah, So even though the president received more votes, Barack Obama did not receive anywhere close to the percentage of votes that Governor Jindal did.
No, John McCain and Mitt Romney got more votes than both of them. But the point is that if you can generate enough turnout among the base and get people off their couch and to the polls, then you're going to win an election. I mean, that's just basic math. So we'll again, I don't know how this election's going to turn out. There's going to be a lot of happening between now and next November and December, but it's obviously far, far too early to call this election.
297-5633. In a few minutes, we'll hear from former Congressman Jeff Landrieu, Republican from New Iberia. Charles on North Foster. Hi, Charles.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Jan. I heard your comments about Bill Cassidy. Bill Cassidy is an embarrassment to Louisiana. He's one of these representatives who signed a letter to close the government. And now that they've dropped defunding Obamacare, they don't seem to want to open the government. I personally, as a Democrat, I can't wait for Bill Cassidy to be in any runoff election. I think his career is over.
There are many who would disagree, and probably our next guest will. I would imagine this would be a close race one way or the other.
Well, every year in the midterms, there's a handful of races that are going to determine who controls the U.S. Senate. I think everybody believes this will be one of them. So just like in Senator Landrieu's previous races, I think we're going to see a lot of outside groups, a lot of outside money come into this state. Mary Landrieu has always been a fighter. She's always been a very strong campaigner. She's always surprised her critics. I mean, nobody expected her to get elected to three terms. Again, each election is different, and we don't know how Bill Cassidy is going to be as a candidate. He's never run statewide before. He could surprise us and do great, or he could surprise us and do badly. It's going to be a very interesting race to see this play out, and I'll be very curious to see how the shutdown politics affects this.
And what happens if Governor Jindal gets in the race?
He's said he's not going to get in the race.
He says he's not running for president, too.
No, he has not completely said he's not running for president. He has said anybody who is thinking about running for president at this point should get his head examined. He has specifically not denied that he's thinking about it.
Well, I think that would imply that he's not running, but maybe he is getting his head examined. But I think anybody who runs for president may need to have their head examined.
I don't know what he's going to do about that, but I've not heard Governor Jindal flatly rule out a run for the White House. But I think he has said in no uncertain fashion that he's not going to be running for U.S. Senate. I take him at his word, and frankly, what I know about the governor is I don't think he would be happy in the U.S. Senate. He's an executive. He's always been happiest as an executive And I think if he runs for something else beyond this, it will be the White House.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jan Mohler. It's always good to talk with you, and let's keep doing it.
Okay. Thank you.
And we're joined now by Congressman Jeff Landry, recently voted out of Congress, thrown in the same district with Charles Bustani, but remains an eloquent voice from the right, a lawyer. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim.
Nice to talk with you, Jeff Landry.
Same here.
Where are you today? Are you in New Iberia today?
I am in New Iberia today. I'm in Louisiana and loving every minute of it.
Well, before we get to the government shutdown, what's going on with you and Buddy Caldwell?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I received a call, or my assistant received a call at our office to verify an email from Mr. Caldwell's office, and said that we would be receiving an email shortly. And lo and behold, about 15 minutes later, I received a letter addressed to me and several other people asking us to come and meet with him on an issue of contingency fee contracts and a suit by the St. John Parish School Board. I was about as surprised to have that letter as I guess you were to read it.
Well, and what happened?
Well, I took a look at the letter and I made a couple of calls. I was trying to understand exactly, it had to be, at the end of the day, this was a political move on the attorney general. It was purely politics. He evidently is understanding that he's feeling some heat for approving the types of contingency fee contracts that are out there. Number one, those contracts, we believe, are unconstitutional based upon Supreme Court ruling, on top of the fact that it's a very strange issue. I mean, here we are. The attorney general is going to take part in approving or disapproving a contract of which he's then going to become a party to the lawsuit. At the end of the day, look, we elected him to make these decisions over the next couple of years. If he doesn't want to make those decisions, if he feels they're too tough, then maybe it's time for him to step aside.
Well, in your letter to him or your press release, you say if Mr. Caldwell is unsure as to what he should do, I encourage him to step aside, and I, Jeff Landry, will be happy to enter his office and make the right decisions on the behalf of the people of Louisiana. So you're offering to be the attorney general?
Well, I'm offering, and if he doesn't want to do the job, somebody's going to have to do it, and I'll be more than happy to go in there and make the right decision for the state. I mean, at the end of the day, I think the decisions he made have been poor in the era of job creation. I think that most of the decisions he has made when it comes to these contingency fee contracts have had an opposite effect of job creating. I mean, look, at the end of the day, again, think about where we are in this particular issue. We're talking about education. There is evidently a problem between the school boards and the legislatures on how money is being appropriated. And that's a function of the legislature. He shouldn't be dictating or trying to dictate policy through the courts. At the end of the day, policy in Louisiana and in this country is dictated through the legislature.
Now, why would you attack your fellow Republican, Mr. Caldwell, so vigorously?
Well, I mean, look, you know me, Jim. I'm not one to pull any punches regardless of party affiliation. I went up to Washington and recognized there's not much difference between Democrats and Republicans. They only care about themselves and being elected, and they leave the people with the bill. At the end of the day, I don't believe that Mr. Caldwell is acting like a conservative, which is a lot more important to me than a particular party label.
Okay. Will you run against him?
Will I run against him? Oh, look, I've had a lot of different offers. A lot of people have encouraged me to do a lot of different things. I was in Baton Rouge on Saturday at the LSU game and ended up in a number of conversations of people asking me to move over there and run in the 6th Congressional District. I've had some people ask me to run for the Attorney General's position. Those are all flattering. Right now, I'm trying to run my family, enjoying being back in Louisiana, trying to continue to be a voice of conservative government, less government, trying to make people understand that at the end of the day, the more we get government off of our backs, the more freer we'll be. We need to grow the middle class. We need to create jobs here in Louisiana. I enjoy being a voice of that ideology.
Well, it sounds like you're not ruling out running for an office, and Attorney General would seem to be one that would be a good target for you.
Well, you know, I've found that at the end of the day, if you try to open and close doors on your own without some input from the man upstairs, you normally fall flat on your face. So I would hate to say that to either rule anything in or out at this time.
So you might run for the 6th District, you might run for Attorney General, or you might not.
And I might not run at all. I might just, you know, occasionally do the show with you.
That's okay. Well, do you wish you were in Washington right now?
It'd be nice to be in Washington and help some of those that are trying to continue this fight. I was there actually last week. I held a dinner for quite a few members, 3 or 4 dozen members of Congress, and a couple of U.S. senators to kind of talk about where we were. It was a nice gathering. I can tell you that I think that conservatives had the edge here up until the time that the speaker went over to the White House, and things have seemed to fall apart since then. I don't understand how the American people are not in an uproar that Congress and the president are going to enjoy a special health care subsidy that they are not going to enjoy under this current health care law. And to me, that's a pretty easy decision for Congress to make. I don't know why Harry Reid and the president can't just agree that, hey, look, at the end of the day, this is a health care law that we've shoved down the throats of the American people that is evidently not working and no one wanting to sign up for. But at the end of the day, if we were the architects of it, so we'll participate in it at the same level as the American people.
So you blame this impasse primarily on the White House?
Oh, absolutely. Well, no. They shared equally with Senator Reid. I believe that the Senate Democrats and the White House are squarely to blame for both the government shutdown and the threat of the government not to reach its debt ceiling. Because I think that the Republicans have shown time and time again that they're willing to meet halfway, that they have some issues that they believe strongly in. I believe that the House, at the end of the day, under the Constitution, is the chamber that's designed to control the purse, and they're exercising their rights. And you know, for the president and Harry Reid to whine about that and to just say, "Look, it's either going to be our way or the highway," is not the American way, Jim.
Well, as you have stated, it looks like public opinion polls indicate that the American people right now are blaming Republicans more than Harry Reid or Barack Obama.
Well, look, at the end of the day, every opinion poll I see is that the American people hate the dysfunctioning of the government as a whole, both Democrats and Republicans. I saw the president's job approval rating dipped under 40% last week. I used to blame my mother for whipping me, but today I really appreciate the whipping that she gave me.
So somebody need to be whipped on Capitol Hill?
Well, I think the American people would do good in just sweeping them all, just whipping them all out of the Capitol.
297-5633 is your number. Back with former Congressman Jeff Landry on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. Congressman Jeff Landry is with us. He is no longer a member of the U.S. House of Representatives, but still follows politics near and far quite closely. Senate leaders neared the completion last night of a bipartisan deal to raise the debt ceiling and end the government shutdown. The rest of the world braces for the possibility of an American default that some say could set off a giant global financial disaster. Congressman Jeff Landry, do you think that this situation is as bad as advertised if there isn't some sort of an accord in the next 48 hours?
No, I think that the piece that Moody's put out last week says it all, that at the end of the day, not reaching the debt ceiling or failing to raise the debt ceiling of the country does not, in fact, put the government in default. I was amazed that Moody's put that statement out there, and very few media sources picked it up. This is an issue of cash flow. At the end of the day, there's plenty of cash coming in to pay the interest and the debt. The timing of those payments may be somewhat off. There's also the rumor that Social Security and Medicare payments can't go out. Again, that's a a false pretense. That's something that liberals use constantly to scare the American people. You know, look, last year, last year, we said that if sequester, you know, the media said that if sequester kicked in, the president made probably about 3 weeks of speeches around the country, spending a lot of our tax dollars trying to convince Americans that if the sequester went into play, that people were going to lose their jobs and that the government was just not going to be able to provide the services that it needed to provide. And here we are, you know, after a year, almost a year of living under sequester cuts, the American people are finding out that the government is operating just fine.
297-5633. Former Congressman Jeff Landry, Republican from New Iberia, says this isn't as bad as that is people are projecting. We'll find out, perhaps, in the next few days. Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Jeff Landry.
Yes, Mr. Landry, do you support the lawsuit asking the oil companies to pay for coastal restoration, or Governor Jindal's position that would have the taxpayers pay for?
No, absolutely, I do not support that lawsuit. I believe that the Southwest Levee District is doing the state of Louisiana a lot more harm than good in this matter. I mean, look, at the end of the day, let's look at the facts. The facts are that if there is an entity that's responsible for the coastal loss that Louisiana is occurring, it is the Corps of Engineers. Squarely, the Corps of Engineers and the things that and the decisions that the Corps has made over the years has greatly affected Louisiana's coast, especially out in South Louisiana, more than any other single industry. And look, at the end of the day, I think that we're finally getting to a point here in Louisiana where we're going to start to finally receive money to help our coast, and that is going to be coming from the offshore oil royalties that we're going to be receiving. You know, the bulk of it starting in 2017 is something that our delegation, when Governor Jindal was in Washington, worked real hard on and was able to procure for us. And so, no, I believe that suit has the ability to turn our coastal master plan up on its head, and I agree with the governor on that particular issue.
Do you think the oil industry has some culpability?
Look, at the end of the day, I think that there may be some culpability from the oil and gas industry. I think they've recognized it. I think they've paid for it. You know, the sad part, Jim, is that I always notice that when the government fails to do its job, they want to blame someone else. So in this particular case, the government's out there saying, look, we issued these permits, and these permits were supposed to abide by this particular criteria in handling these permits. And then decades go by, and the government doesn't enforce all of the criteria under the particular permit, and so it decides one day now it's going to enforce it. What is the responsibility or the accountability on the government side for not holding people's feet to the fire when they issue that criteria? So again, I think that we need to look about, you know, this should be about moving Louisiana forward rather than looking backwards.
297-5633 is your number for Jeff Landry. John on Highland. John, good morning. You're on with Jeff.
Yes, good morning. I'm kind of not sure where to start, but I would just say the kind of defiant ignorance that Mr. Landry has been speaking this morning is really hurting Louisiana. You know, this attitude that you don't listen to the economists, you don't listen to the scientists, you just decide what you like, and that defines reality. We cannot afford that. We cannot afford that. All the economists and experts who say the default is a big deal, they must be fools, obviously. This has got us in big trouble. He's not alone, but we're going to feel the impacts more than other places.
Well, I what I would say to that is it's a shame that this man, that he has ruled himself as the person who determines what's fact and what's fiction. Look, I'm just reading from Moody's. Moody's is a premier, forecast. You know, what Moody's does is forecast our economy. We look to Moody's for economic indicators, and they issued this release last week saying, look, the failure to raise the debt ceiling will not in any way cause the U.S. to go in default. There are mechanisms in which the government can take in order to avoid defaulting on on its debt. The difference is that people like the gentleman who just called in would like to believe that we could just continue to print money and just go about our business and live way beyond our means. Maybe he has an American Express card that continues to allow him to just spend and spend and spend and never have to pay it back. In my household, I don't have that luxury. But those are the facts. I mean, he doesn't get to choose between what's fact and what's fiction. What's fact is fact, and what's fiction is fiction.
Well, Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell, who don't particularly like each other, have been talking. And they talked into the evening last night, and apparently they have come to an agreement between themselves to lift the debt limit through February 7th, pass a resolution to finance the government through January 15th, and conclude formal discussions on a long-term plan and spending plan no later than December 13th. But this is not sitting well with some members of the Republican caucus in the House. Tim Huelskamp of Kansas, a man you may know, Jeff Landry, he says, "We've got a name for it. It's called the Senate Surrender Caucus. Anybody who would vote for that in the House as a Republican would virtually guarantee a primary challenger." Your response?
Well, I know Tim. He's a great patriot from Kansas, I believe. Yeah, Tim's from Kansas. He was a farmer. Look, think about what you just read, Jim. The fact is we're going to just raise the debt ceiling until January, and then miraculously, Washington's going to come up with some solution between now and January that's going to get us on a path of sustainability. You know, it's just like the caller you had earlier, living in a pretty fictitious world. At some point in time, we can't continue to kick the can down the road. You know, this morning I had a nice lady ask me, she said, "You know, Jeff, you know, they're telling me my 401k could be in jeopardy with not reaching the debt ceiling." And she said, "What did you say to that?" And yeah, and I told her, "You're right. You know, there could be, the markets could react negatively, which could affect your 401k. But then I told her, I said, "But I'll tell you this, the failure of our leaders to put us on a sustainable path will cripple your 401k down the line. So you can either take some short-term pain for some long-term gain, or have a little short-term gain, which is what the caller earlier wanted, for a wrecked economy further down the road."
Charlotte in Iberia Parish, you're on with Jeff Landry, your former congressman.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm calling to ask the congressman whether our members of Congress and the Senate are living in a fantasy world by having their salaries increased automatically without them having to vote for it, and how that squares in the face of eliminating programs like, or reducing programs like WIC and the other things that the poor people depend upon.
What about the automatic pay increases for members of Congress?
Well, look, I mean, Jim, I was a gentleman who went to Washington and declined my congressional health care and my congressional retirement because I felt that members of Congress didn't live under the same set of rules that the average citizen that they govern did. I feel the same way she does, that basically Congress sets a set of rules for us and then lives by another set. That's why I can't understand, and I would hope that people like Charlotte would appreciate when Senator Vitter and many other Republicans try to hold the president and Harry Reid's feet to the fire and just basically saying, look, it's time to eliminate Congress's special health care subsidies under Obamacare.
Well, it's one thing to do it for members of Congress, but I think Senator Vitter, he wants to do it for every worker who's a member of the staff of.
Absolutely. I mean, you don't think those staff members had a lot to do with passing and crafting that legislation? Jim, I mean, look, at the end of the day, if we're all going to be in this together, let's all really be in it together. If it's good for the goose, it should be good for the gander as it goes.
Well, Senator Vitter has certainly caught the ire of the former boxer, Harry Reid, and it'd be fun to see those two go toe-to-toe. Vitter calls him an old-style mafia thug.
Well,
you don't believe that, do you?
Well, look, at the end of the day, there's been a tremendous amount of name-calling back and forth, but there's not been a whole lot of substance to the solution. And the solution can't just be a continuation of liberal policies like Harry Reid and many of the Democrats have embarked upon since 2006. I mean, if you look at the size of our debt and the growth of our government and the types of policies that have been put in place, it's not American. It is not a function of the Constitution. And those are the things that I think conservatives like myself are so afraid of. Look, we're getting to a point where our debt is, you know, knocking on a $20 trillion number. Doesn't that scare you, Jim?
Sure, it scares me. Lois in Central. Good morning. You're on with Jeff Landry.
Good morning, Jim. I would like to ask your guest if there's any way or any common ground between Republicans and Democrats, and would he be willing to compromise on anything?
Absolutely.
Or do you feel like you have to, as an ideologue, you have to stand your ground against anything that the Democrats are for?
No, absolutely not. I mean, look, I think that what you have seen over the last 30 or 40 days have shown time and time again that Republicans are willing to meet the Democrats more than halfway. I mean, at the end of the day, let's think of where we started. So Republicans started and said, look, we're going to pass funding bills that fund the entire government except for Obamacare. The Democrats said, no, we're not going to have that. So then the Republicans moved and said, well, I'll tell you what. You believe in this health care law so much. Why don't you at least agree to live like all the other Americans under that health care law?
Jennifer and Tara. Jennifer, please be brief. Our time is short with Congressman Landry. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, Mr. Landry, I have a question for you. You're asking that the Congress and their staff give up their special health care and participate under the Affordable Care Act. Now, from my understanding, the Affordable Care Act is for people who are, that exchange is for people who don't have an option through their employers. Isn't the Congress just like every other employer-subsidized health care plan?
No, the problem is that, number one, that's a completely taxpayer-paid subsidy. On top of the fact that the increases, okay, so here's the problem. Your employer goes out there, he's receiving health care increases from his insurer. He's passing those increases on to you. You're having to foot those increases. Well, the government is being subjected to those same types of health care increases inside the insurance market.
All right, one last question. Please be brief. Doc on Airline. Doc, you're on with Jeff Landry.
Good morning. Right now, I think I saw this the other day where every child under the age of 10 has a debt that they have to pay off of $185,000. If this Obamacare thing goes the way they think it's going to, that's going to increase to $225,000.
All right. Congressman Landry, is Doc on the right track?
Is Doc on the right? Did he say if we he
was saying that Obamacare, I think he was saying it was going to increase the amount of debt that each person in the United States would be responsible for.
Absolutely. Absolutely, this health care is going to astronomically increase the cost of government. And then, of course, that means the government has to borrow more money. Therefore, we, the taxpayers, have to pay more. Jim, that's an idea. Yeah, right. he's extremely
okay.
accurate.
Okay, do you think Medicare was a good thing?
Do I think Medicare was a good thing back in the 60s?
Yes.
Well, look, I think absolutely at the end of the day that both Social Security and Medicare were both great programs. They were designed as safety nets and backstops to help those who helped build this country ensure that they could live the rest of their lives you know, in their golden years in comfort and without the fear of being left completely alone. Have those programs expanded to the point that it's unaffordable? You know, that's the question we have today. I'm not for doing away with Medicare or Social Security. In fact, I'm for protecting them, because under the new Health Care Act, there is no greater threat to Medicare.
Thank you, Congressman Landry. It's good to talk with you again. Let's do it again soon.
Thank you, Jim.
My pleasure. And we'll be back tomorrow. For Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.